What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This podcast is part of the C-Suite Radio Network, turning the volume up on business.
Hello, and welcome to the Plugged In Podcast, where we talk with founders and CEOs in order to bring you the real stories of failures and triumphs, highs and lows they've experienced on their journey toward success. We will go in depth with our guests to give you insights into how they have taken an idea from concept to realization, making those first key hires to building the right team, scaling revenues, how they overcame obstacles, and much more as we learn how they achieve success. This is the podcast that you want to subscribe to if you want to learn how to succeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Plugged In. I'm Ellie Mandelbaum, an industry veteran who decided to do more than just listen to podcasts, but actually start one in which I interview people much smarter than me. In this episode, we're speaking with Dov Moran, a world-renowned inventor of the USB memory stick and the pioneer of several flash memory technologies, and now the managing partner of Grove Ventures. Dov is one of Israel's most prominent high-tech leaders, visionary entrepreneurs, and investors. Dov, welcome to the show. I hope I covered everything. If not, you could fill in, you know, why don't you fill in some of the blanks?
You covered too much.
I covered I hear that.
Until you finished. Oh, you said everything you can about me. That's it. I'm going. Bye.
Excellent. So I want to get started, and you know, this is going to take you back a while, but how did you get started in your career? Like, what was your first job?
My first job? Wow, this was many years ago. Probably when I was a child. I worked for my father in his garage. I was helping my grandfather with his project that he gave to me when in the summertime. And I got money, yeah. My father paid me something like today, probably would be 10 shekels per month, per week, or something like that. But I was proud working with him. I enjoyed doing that.
Got it. And what was your first job post-army?
Okay, so then I went to study. Navy, actually.
Okay.
And when I went to the Navy, I was dying to program. Because, you know, I studied computer engineering. You go to the Navy, you become a project manager. And by the way, amazing period of time. It's fascinating. It's great. But these were the first days of microprocessors, not of PC. Microprocessors. I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then you die to do programming yourself, but they don't allow you. You don't design. You don't do programming. Programming, everybody is doing. Everyone is doing. Israel aircraft industries are doing it fine, but how about me? That's what I want to do. Other than writing specs and going to critical design reviews. So I was really dying to do that. And I was trying to find anywhere I could do some programming. So I went. These days, there was a computer called Apple IIc.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends said, hey, I do have they want us to have a project that we can even get money. I was doing some project for Yeda, was a company who imported these days Apple to Israel. Mm-hmm. How about us doing the job together? Now, I knew some computer stuff he didn't know nothing about. So let's do it together, which means you do 90% of the job, but we share the revenue.
Yeah.
I said, okay, let's do it. I was happy to do it. By the way, how much money did we get from it? Zero. So the split half-half was okay. But it gave me some experience, and I understood programming. And I found a job. Someone was looking for a job to do programming for a respiratory laboratory in Ichilov
Hospital.
And the manager of this hospital was ready to pay for the job 100 shekels. I said, I'll take 100 shekels. Actually, the cost of the... Now, he wants a project, very small project. Just, you know, I want some... The lady to enter the data, and you store the data, you can recover data, you can... And I said, okay, I'll do it. 100 shekels, you know, it's not a lot of money, but still, you know, I want to program. Let me program. And I've done it. Then, of course, after I did it, he said, hey, wait. I want to get the results that all the people with the unique cases. Okay, I'll add to it. I want to see if somebody comes, and he comes, let's say, 5 times. I want to see something that shows his results. Okay, I'll add it. The cost of the bus tickets going every day, every few days to the, at the evening, because I was at the day during daytime, I was working for the Navy. Mm-hmm. But in the evening, I spent many of the evenings there. The cost of the tickets, bus tickets, to go to Petah Tikva, round trip, was more than 100 shekels. So if you ask me, I paid money to work. Yeah, that's reality.
So from that, did anything from those type of jobs really stick with you moving forward through your career?
Yeah, of course. You know, I learned what's the meaning of work. I learned how difficult is it to raise money. I learned the meaning of what's the meaning of getting money. I learned programming. I understood projects, and I learned a lot of things. You learn when you put your hands into the mud. Yeah, that's what you learn.
No, I totally hear that. I mean, that is one thing that I think a lot of people, you know, realize is, if you're not getting down and dirty, you know, you're not going to, you won't succeed. I mean, that's something that you really got to understand, what everybody's going through and all the different, you know, jobs that a company has. You're going to go through it. And so you're actually able to really see it. So, you know, what was something that you failed at early on that really bothered you? Right. Something that maybe that you had to overcome.
What bothered me? I think that maybe something which I can talk about, what really bothered me, it was when I was at the age of maybe 12.
Yeah.
And I asked myself the question of, why do I survive? Why am I still breathing? Mm-hmm. What is really my purpose? Or why shall people generally worldwide live or do whatever they are doing? It's a tough question. It's still under consideration. But I think that I did find a reason, and I do have a reason. I think it's something that leads my way, and that's my religious, actually, which is similar to yours, but still, we do have purpose. That's a similarity. We are religious. Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have a purpose. We do believe in a purpose. It's a bit different, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the fact that we have a purpose is by itself very meaningful and very important. So, yeah, they asked me what bothered me. That bothered me.
No, I hear that. That's one of the reasons I moved to Israel. That was that purpose,
yeah,
right? That deeper meaning that I found, you know, in Israel. So, you know, let's move on to, you know, so you created the USB, and I think that, you know, I say it so casually, but it's really not. I mean, it was a really, you know, revolutionized the computer space, right? The data space, where, you know, everybody here at Discount Key, you know, it's so prevalent now, right? It's so, but how'd you come up with it? Like, what made you think of, you know, I just, you know, why not, let's get something that's a little small and put something on it, and this way I can take the data and just go wherever I want with it. Like, when did you come up with that idea?
So the story, I do have a story. I do have this moment of inspiration, if I can define something like that. But I tell you the truth, I told this story so many times. I bought 10
Okay,
again.
But
there's something which I it's important to me to say to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, end of the day, I did this invention of the USB flashlight. After dealing with flash, understanding, taking flash, make flash not as a USB device, but taking flash and make it something that appears like a hard drive. I knew that USB is coming to the market because I read a lot about what's going on. I knew what Dell is doing, what HP is doing, what Intel is promoting. It's actually, the end of the day, it's connecting dots. So I could tell you a glorious story. You know, I went to a conference, which is a tool, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a conference, my computer didn't work, somebody offered his computer. I said, how can I transfer my file into your computer? There's no way. End of this day, I said, hey, never again in my life I go to make a presentation without having a copy.
For you.
Presentation in my pocket. That's the glory moment, yeah. But
so the reality,
you have to learn, you have to study, you have to get very deep into subjects that you want to explore. You have to, it's a lot of work. Even after getting this idea, there was a lot of work to be done until we made it a success. Hey, I have an amazing idea. You know, people live under the belief that they'll go to the beach, they sit under the tree, And then, you know, Apple will fall down or something like that. And, hey, I have an idea. Yeah, I'll invent whatever. No. Invention comes from a very hard work. Comes from getting very deep into issues, into subjects. Very, very deeply. Yeah. Understanding the ecosystem around. Understanding the hurdles, the needs, the requirements. In these patents, in these inventions, I believe. I think these are the inventions who are changing.
Okay, so, and correct on that. I agree with, you know, everything that you said. But so you came up with it, right? And then what did you do after that? Because one of the things I'm trying to get to is, and we'll get to Grove as well, but I want people to understand, like, the process of, you came up with the idea, okay, and then did you go right away to raise money? Did you take internally and you so build
when
it?
When I got the idea, I already had a company which dealt with Flash. So we knew what is Flash. I knew what is Flash. It wasn't, hey, I have an idea, let's establish a company. Mm-hmm. There was a company. Mm-hmm. I was running the company. I established this company.
So you're...
By the way, it's not the only idea. I had many ideas. Many other ideas. And many of them just didn't work out. And that's part of life, yes? But we came with this idea, and there were some of my colleagues or my employees that said, hey, it's an amazing idea. Some of them said, it's a shitty idea, there's no chance it's going to work. And then we continued. We bought the product as part of the M-Systems activity. Mm-hmm. And then we tried to promote the product. And the first year, actually, wasn't great. It was very difficult. And then we put a lot of effort to make it a standard in the market. And then competition was coming. And a bunch of tons of Chinese companies with very, very low gross margins. And they were a threat. So the question was how to fight them. Now you have a patent. What do you do? Are you going to sue them one by one? You know, you can't do it. It's a long battle to bring something like that to success.
Correct.
There were many places, many stages where, you know, maybe somebody else would break up or give up and say, no, it doesn't work out. Happened to me the people which worked on this project said, oh, no, we are not going to succeed.
And you just said, we are.
I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. And so you, the first year was hard. The first year you did let's say $1 million, $2 million in sales. How did you scale it? Like, when did you see the aha moment? When did it, like, say, okay, right, the idea that I had and the product is really taking off?
First of all, I replaced the people and put the right people in place. That's important. Always the right people. I think that the biggest issue was when we actually... Actually, the good people are important. It's all people. And, you know, it's almost all people. It's people are not the only thing. But if you don't have the right people, your chances to succeed are very, very low. And I did have an amazing team. And a lot of the success, of course, relate to the team. But I believe that one of the things that we have done, we had patents for the USB flash drive. And the patents were good. By the way, not automatic. We had to go through the process of enhancing the patents, mm-hmm. which is possible. You can do it in the patent office. It's an effort. Don't give up. That's one of the ideas. Even if the patent originally wasn't written the perfect way, we found a way of how to perfect it, how to make it better. And win against competitors that came with another patents that relate to that. But the question, what do you do with patents? So one way is fight with anybody who comes with a similar product. But, you know, fighting, you know, maybe I'm pacifist. Whenever it's required to fight, fight. If it's not required, don't fight. I'm not looking for wars. But the idea is, what do we do? We sued a company in Korea. And the company actually lost in the court miserably. Mm-hmm. And they actually, 2 weeks later, they shut down. 3 weeks later, they came out with another name. So, you want some, you lose some. It's not work like that. So anyway, we said, what should we do? We actually, what we did, which I think was smart, and it wasn't my idea, it's a teamwork. It's a, we took the patents and went to the flash memory manufacturers. Now, when if I have a patent, and this guy here infringed my patent, and you are helping him to do that, if I tell you that this is what's going on, and you continue to help him, I can sue. So we went to these guys, the flash manufacturers, and said, guys, you're supporting this bunch of infringers, yeah? And they infringe our patents, and you can see why. You can see our patent, mm-hmm. you can see the court, one of them we sued, he lost in court. You are supporting a bunch of companies that are infringing our patents. Now, we don't want to sue you. We are very nice guys. You are Israelis. Mm-hmm. Israelis are known worldwide. That's very, very nice guys. Never go to fight with anybody, you know, like Christians. That you hit them one side, they give you the other one, the other one.
How do you call it? You hit on the cheek or?
Cheek. How do you call it?
Cheek,
yeah. Yeah. You give them the second cheek, yeah. We are known as, you know, these nice people say, hey, guys, we don't want to fight with you, but we have an idea. And the idea is, instead of, you know, going to court, it cost you lots of money, mm-hmm. you build a fab. You manufacture flash memory. We don't have a fab. So we give you license to our patents, but you give us a portion of your fab. Now, how much money does it cost to build a fab, you know?
No.
Today it costs about $10 billion. These days it was maybe $3 to $5 billion. Billion, not million. Mm-hmm. Billion okay. dollars. We didn't have the money to build a fab. So we say, we came today, we used the Israeli chutzpah. We say, we don't ask a lot, give us only 15% of the fab. Say, what? 15%? You know how much money it costs us to build it? Say, well, we don't want the physical fab, we don't want the land mm-hmm. or the machinery, just the production. 15% of the production of the fab should come to us. Now, in flash memory, you are always in a oversupply or undersupply. When you are in oversupply, the meaning is that you, the fab is like a large machine at the size of a football uh-huh. court, okay, but not one floor, but five floors. Uh-huh. Think about such a big machine where whenever you turn on the power, the machine begins working. Now, one thing about this machine, you can turn it on, you can't turn it off. The machine is just pouring components one after the other. So if you have to whom to supply, it's great. You are very happy. You make a lot of money. Life mm-hmm. is good. When you are in oversupply, then you make components, but you have no one to sell it to. And then you have to build in the warehouses mm-hmm. to keep this. You can't just throw it to the garbage. You know, there's no garbage that yeah. you can throw the components on the garbage. It doesn't work out. So we were smart to go to them at the times that they were in oversupply and say, yeah, guys, anyway, you manufacture for, you know, for nothing. At least if you give us this component at cost, at no profit, this will be fine for you anyway. And, you know, negotiations, we asked mm-hmm. for 50%, so it was Samsung, they gave us 6, mm-hmm. and never complied with their numbers. And if it was Toshiba, they were much more honest, they gave us maybe 10%. And that's became a great success.
I didn't know about that part, which is that's pretty cool. So pretty much your partnerships really helped you elevate at taking...
I'm a great believer in partnership. I do believe that for us, Israeli companies, we usually don't raise a lot of money. It's rare to see an Israeli company that raises $1 billion. Mm-hmm. In the States, you can see it. We are far away from the market. We partners to succeed. That's part of life. Mm-hmm. And we encourage very much our companies to do partnership and work with a much larger companies existing in the U.S.
So how long did it take you to get to that point? Like from to the point where you're saying, okay, we found our groove, you know, and then you're saying, well, maybe it's time to get out, right? How did the SanDisk, did they come to you? You came to them? Were you working together?
The story of M-Systems. So I established M-Systems actually at January 1989. And over the years, we did flash data storage. Mm-hmm. SanDisk did flash data storage. But somehow, we were in the same field, but we were careful enough not to do exactly what the others were doing. So they were very strong in memory cards.
Mm-hmm.
We did the embedded, mostly embedded and USB flash. They went into B2C, business to consumer, but they did retail, they had a brand name. We did B2B, we did only selling to OEMs. They went to camera manufacturers, we went to phones, smartphones. We were focusing on computers, industrial computers. For them, this wasn't a market. The focus was very much into building the brand and selling to Best Buy.
Staples
and all this. So the companies were actually the same field, but different, competing in
different markets.
And we always used to meet and talk and discuss sometimes I got good advices from Eli Harari, and I think that sometimes I gave him good advices. And he offered me actually a few times throughout the way to be acquired by him, and I said no every time he offered, until came 2006, and I said yes.
Was there any reason why then all of a sudden you said okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was. I usually don't talk about it in that, but that's a long and complicated story. But I was these days very disappointed of my board, and it's a really complicated issue.
No, okay.
And Eli called me in a very sensitive time of my life, and this time he called me. Actually, he called me on the phone and said, "Hey, Dov, how about merging now?" I said, "Okay." And I went with it, you know, with the process.
Were you happy? Looking back, were you happy with the choice?
I was miserable. I was. I saw the company. I tell you something, which again, I don't talk a lot. I felt so bad. You know, short time after the acquisition,
mm-hmm.
I had really heart pain. Now, not heart pain on the spiritual meaning, but physical heart pain. I had the delicate kumalev. It's how do you call it?
Heartache.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I do believe that there is this connection mm-hmm. between what you feel, you know, as a spirit, yeah,
mm-hmm.
and what you feel physically. But, yeah, I didn't like the acquisition. I saw that the company, the F-Systems, had a potential... great potential to go on to mm-hmm. grow and continue its activity as an independent company. But, you know, it's water under the bridge.
Agreed. And so one thing I just want, building up the company, right? You were saying before that you got, you know, you have to get people that, you know, are positive, supportive, you know, that you could work with. Did you have a certain way of hiring people? How did you find the right people?
When M-System was sold, we had revenues of over $1 billion. We had about 1,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
So you hire all the 1,000 people.
Yourself. Yeah, of course.
Of course, you hire people, and you know some of them go with you all the way, and some of them are leaving it, or some of them just, you know, they're not suitable for wherever the company moves
yeah.
to replace them.
But the company culture comes from you, though, right? Did you feel that you were building one?
We had a very, 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 very clear culture. We had very strong values that we complied with. People were talking about the values. People were exercising the values. We had a very clear mission statement.
Got it. Okay, so... You moved on from there, and so what did you decide? You want to do something else? You want to start another company? Did you want to invest? I know that you did. You were going. I think you started Modu as well. After
when I did the acquisition, Eli asked me to stay 6 months at the company to help the transition and the integration of it. And I think that I've done quite a good job. The company in Israel still exists. Maybe. Not 1,000 people, but not far away from that. And I did help Sandisk to actually structure differently. And I did help Eli to keep the customers of M-Systems.
Mm-hmm.
And then exactly six months after I gave my word that I'll stay, I'll work till 12. I allowed myself to work only this day, only till 12. But I worked many days before till mm-hmm. 12 till midnight. So this was the working till noon. And then at noon, I I called the management, you know, the guys who worked with me very close in the last years, and we had the Ramnukos, we said, how do you say, Ramnukos? We said L'chaim, down some wine, some stupid wine. That I got as a present from somebody. And I say, guys, continue, make great stuff, do well, work for Sundays, it's an amazing company. I crossed the street, I went about 100 meters, entered the new office, and said, okay, I'm beginning to work my new company, Modo. That's a mistake.
Why?
Take vacation.
Take vacation.
You need to take vacation.
We'll see detox.
You need to allow yourself to think about what you want to do, how you want to do it. To check things really solely, not rush, nothing. No. At these stages, you need to really... These are decisions that are so important that you really need to go and cover yourself from all directions, understand what is, if it's possible, if it's feasible, if it's the right thing, how to do it, with whom to do it. And I was I didn't allow myself even half an hour.
So did that, you know, I think at Modu, just for my listeners, you saw that company as well, but it was more for the patent, right? More for
Modu, we sold the patents and technology to Google. It wasn't a great success.
Okay.
Really. All depends how you see it. Financially, it wasn't a success. On the other side, Modu was a crazy company. It was actually, it lived very short time. It lived, I think, about something altogether 3.5 years. We really had a flag of innovation, crazy stuff, go invent, bring crazy ideas, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And there were many, many startups that actually went out of Modu with some of the ideas that were structured when the people were at Modu, which is great. I'm very happy for that. So I don't have many children, but I do have many, many
children. So that was a question. So my question then is, you know, did that help you? And again, you know, because you were an angel investor, right? And
after that, I began to do angel investment.
Did it shape your attitude or what you were looking for going through that process with Modu and seeing some of the things spawn and grow from there? Like, what was your, I wanted to go through your angel investing time and then your actual venture capital time now. And your mentality or approach, is it the same? You know, as an angel investor, did you just look at, you know, the individual, or did you look at more of the, you know, overall structure, etc.?
Okay, it worked differently. It wasn't like that. What happened is that after Modu, by the way, in parallel to Modu, that's again another mistake. I've done many mistakes. At the same time that I established Modu, I took upon myself to become the chairman of Tower Semiconductor. Eli, which was investor at Tower, came to me at the beginning of 2007 and said, listen, you know, this Tower Semiconductor, it's a fab in Migdal HaEmek, and they look for a chairman, they really need the help. How about becoming their chairman? And I said, no, I know Tower quite well. We looked at Tower a few years before that. Tower was looking for investments, and actually that's when Sandisk and other companies invested into it. And my partner these days went to look at the Tower, and he came back very, very excited, and he said, let's invest. And I went to meet the guys, and I looked at the business plan, and it seems to me not the great one. And I said, hey, these guys, I don't think that they are going to really create success. And they actually, I knew that they were in trouble. So I said no. And I still remember a very tough conversation I had with one of the other investors of Tower that was calling me and saying, hey, how come you don't invest? I know that because your partner want to invest and you are non-Zionist. Or, I am Zionist, but yeah. I have a responsibility to my company and to the investors at my companies, which are many people that have their pension funds invested in. And this is incorrect for M-Systems to be done. So anyway, I told Eli, I know Tower. I don't. He said, listen, go to meet the CEO. Okay, Migdal HaEmek, it's an hour, hour 20 minutes from Kfar Saba. I went to meet the CEO. The CEO is a very smart guy, Russell. He he was already serious at the company, so it wasn't new to the company. And he what he did smartly, he actually, we chat about that. He asked me, why didn't I want to invest? Mm-hmm. And I explained to him. He said, he opened his window. He said, listen, you see this city here with Dal HaEmek? If no one would come to help me, I said, Jamel, this company is going to be terminated. And you will have a new responsibility that all this city, it's not a big city, yeah, it's a small city, but all this city is going to be unemployed because every employee has a family and they have somebody who sells them the vegetables and has a barber and teachers for this. All of it, all the community here becomes unemployed. Your responsibility for that, Mr. Moran. I said, what should I say? I said, okay, I'll come. I said, how about, salary? I said, mm-hmm. I don't need salary. I just sold them systems. I did not have money. No salary, no option, nothing. We're talking about maybe, it's a chairman of the world. Mm-hmm. you don't have to come to the meeting. I found myself going there a lot, spending a lot of my time. It was very problematic. When there are troubles, I didn't sleep at night. Mm-hmm. When there was a requirement to go to China or to the States, I went to China and the States. And one of the things I'm very, very proud of, we did the amazing turnaround in this company. Yeah. And from a company that was really at the edge of the Kzeatsuk, how do you say it in English? Edge of the rock.
Yeah, edge of the cliff.
Edge of the cliff. Yeah, edge of the cliff. Two wheels on air. Yeah, I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Today it's a company with a valuation of billions of dollars. And clearly, it's not that I did it. It's not I couldn't do it. But, there was an amazing team that did it. And the CEO is an amazing guy. He's smart. But I see that they built somebody else built this wagon. Somebody was riding the wagon very, very good. Somebody was running the engine very, very well. It's just that this wagon went to the wrong direction. The only thing I've done is maybe take this wagon and really, with huge effort, change the direction. That's the only thing I've done. But this saved the company. And yeah, with many others, but I do have a, I believe, important role in doing this change. So I'm very proud of that.
What was the change? The market change, like in terms of their approach to it, or their...
I tell you what I've done, which is most crazy stuff. You remember who is the guy who sent me to Eli Harari?
Yeah.
I fired him from the board. And the second thing I've done, I found that 25% of the revenue of Tower came from SanDisk. And 40% of the production of Tower was dedicated to SanDisk. This is me. This is me, mm-hmm. not the other guys at the company. I enforced the company to stop manufacturing for SanDisk because they were losing money on any component they were selling to SanDisk. This was very, very difficult. The company went actually to 3-4 days, work days a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which is fab. Fab is supposed to manufacture without stopping, yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe 21 shifts a week. We went to 3-4 shifts a week. Crazy, yeah? But that actually forced the company to look for the right customers, to look for the right areas.
Got it. Interesting. Well, that's a unique story. All right. So we have a little bit more time. So I want to go now into how'd you start Grove?
After that, I established several more companies. I began to invest in companies. And looking at my activity as an angel investor, I do have one investment I've done that covers probably for all my losses, which is a company where the value of the latest investment in this company, I'm not joking.
Mm-hmm.
I can go into details, but the latest value of this company is 320x the value I invested in.
320x?
Yeah, 320x. Yeah.
You invested at the angel round?
I was the investor.
You were the investor.
Yeah, of course. There was no other investor. It's a crazy investor. Nobody else was crazy to invest. So anyway, but looking at the activity in general, I was unhappy with the activity, and it took me time to understand that if I want to invest, it should be done professionally. Professional means I cannot establish companies, running, being the CEO of companies, and at the same time to invest. If I want to do it, that's what I have to do. By the way, when I was the CEO of M-Systems, I was only the CEO of M-Systems. I didn't invest in companies. I didn't involve myself in other activities, which I as a recommendation to anybody. You want to do something and create success, do only that. Yeah, don't do that. And I see sometimes guys coming to us and they say, yeah, I'm working there and I walk there. You can't walk here and walk there and expect to be successful in anything you do. One of my failures at Modu was the fact that I was actually at the same time the chairman of Tower that directed a lot of time and attention for me.
Mm-hmm.
I like the investment part. I like it very, very much. I actually can bring into the investment, into the process, my knowledge, my know-how, my experience, all the scarf. Discuss that I got exactly. In my long way and help others, and actually not help one or two companies but help many companies to become successful. And one more thing, to do that you need money. Why do you need money? You need to have a team. You need to have analysts. You need to have a team that would go and explore and do a very thorough due diligence, and then not just visit the companies once a quarter but work with the company daily or weekly in order to help them to survive and do the right things. And you need money because you need to do not only the initial investment, but you do have to invest in the follow-ons, and maybe the follow-ons to the follow-ons and so on. The meaning of it is very simple, fund. Mm-hmm. That's what we've done. We established a fund.
Was it hard to raise the first round?
The first round, I think it was a relatively hard. Some people will tell you, hey, it was very easy. You've done it. Actually, I done it with, we planned to raise 100. We found ourselves with commitment of 125.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, found a balance at the right number of 110.
Mm-hmm.
But relatively hard, I'll tell you why. Because many people said, hey, you are greatest entrepreneur, but an entrepreneur, inventor, is an investor.
It's different.
Actually, this is, looking at it now, this is totally full of shit. It's full of shit. Mm-hmm. Actually, at most of the great funds in America, the guys who are leading those funds are ex-entrepreneurs that made success.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Andreessen Horowitz, Mark Andreessen, and Ben Horowitz. Look at Vinod Khosla. Vinod Khosla was one of the founders of Sun Microsystems. These guys were entrepreneurs. These guys came with a very slow technology background. And but in Israel, you know, in Israel, most of the people running VCs they are not engineers and they never established a company. So there were this, you know, this buzz, you know, hey, Dov, he's great as entrepreneur. keep him entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I finally raised the money, established the fund. The fund is doing amazingly well. So of course you have to count the money, you know, when you get out of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we can analyze a fund success, I believe that we are one of the best funds in the country.
And you focus with your
very focused. We are probably the only fund in Israel that is 100% focused on deep technology.
On new technology? Deep technology.
What is deep technology? It's a semiconductor, hardware, sensors, AI, machine learning, science. I do talk about science. Yeah. Science is important. A lot of stuff that we are doing actually are generated by research done at the Israeli universities.
Mm-hmm. And interesting. And I just, so you know, the listeners know that you just closed your second fund as well recently.
We raised our second fund as well.
And how many investments do you have so far?
How many investments?
Yeah.
So in the first fund, we did 13 investments.
13.
I know 30 is a good number in June. But unfortunately, we took a decision to invest in 14.
Okay.
So one more company, we're going to invest in one more company. Mm-hmm. We already have the money to for the second fund. And the second fund probably will be something like 15 to 17
Got it. And are you, so you're helping them, you know, on the hiring, you're helping them?
Yeah, of course.
Everything.
Everything. I tell you a story. I went with one of my companies to the Far East to find a partner for their development. They need a partner. I told you, partners are very, very important. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the case. The original, I saw that they'll develop their own. They have no chance to develop their own. And I did, and I do, since I do understand very well what they were doing, I could explain to them why the concept is not great or is really far feasibility. And they agreed, and we went to find to look for partners, and I went with them. And you know, every company we went to, it's semiconductor companies. Mm-hmm. The guy, surprisingly, the guy who came to meet us was the CEO, and I knew almost all of them. They knew me actually. I didn't remember none of them, but they all remembered me because hey, we were together at Intel, mm-hmm. 20 years ago. Yes, I did work with Intel. And he was a project manager at Intel these days. And now he's, that's great. And then this guy's here. We tried to sell us a tower. I tried to sell tower at some stage. Yeah. And this guy's, I was the head of the flash department at Hynix. Wow. Great. Brothers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, we signed two agreements. So after this trip, the guys from this company said, hey, look, maybe we'll give you a business card. You are, it's a new brand. Hey, Dr. Moran, VP Business Development, new brand. I said, guys, if you want to give me a business card, please do write manager of business development, not VP. I said, why do you want us to write manager? Managers below. Mm-hmm. I said, because one day you have to hire a VP of business development, and then you have to fire me. You can't have two VPs of business development in one company. If you give me a title of manager, I can stay the manager of business development, mm-hmm. even when you hire a VP of business development. So give me this title. They agreed. I work for them. I work for them. I enjoy doing it. I see amazing people. I see amazing inventions. I see the future. I see technology that is making an impact and actually would make this world a bit better. And if you remember, there was at some time you asked me, we talked about what's the target? Mm-hmm. Why you do what you do?
Yeah,
that's my religion. That's my belief. I'm here in order to make this world a bit better.
A better place.
Yeah. That's my mission. That's my life.
Which is, it's a good mission. I mean, I wish everybody had that mission to make it a little bit better. It would be a better world. With that, I just, two more questions. And this is going a little bit back, moving. When you were 15, you know, and I ask everybody the questions, what did you have an idea of what you wanted to be?
The truth is, I know that the truth is yes, because I didn't say, I knew I'm going to be an engineer. My grandfather was an inventor. My grandfather... I lived with my grandfather till the age of 18. The grandfather died exactly 1 week before I went to the army, mm-hmm. For Tionut. Exactly, but he died Friday, mm-hmm. afternoon, Friday when my father wasn't yet at home. But it was enough time to take him to the hospital. He died, and then there was Shiva, mm-hmm. and then Sunday, 9 days later, morning. Out of the Shiva, the Zen of Shiva, I went to
army
service. That's it. So I lived with my grandfather. My grandfather, he wasn't an engineer, but he was a mechanical guy. He became these days probably he was defined as engineer. He had his masgiria, mechanic store. I knew I'm going to become engineer. There was no doubt in my mind.
Interesting. I mean, that's so was he like a mentor to you? Like, did you...
When he lived, he never positioned himself as a mentor. But I lived with him, and he was a tough guy. He was a really tough guy. I do believe that actually he lived his life, this maybe last period of his life, with the approach that he should mentor me.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a lot of effort into that. The meaning of this effort is that whenever summer came, I had to do projects for him. He kept me honest. He kept me humble. He actually put the right seeds into me to explore, to research, to try not to break down. I still have my memory from my grandfather asking me in one of the summer vacations. We did a project that he transferring how do you call it? On the window you have shelves, not shelves. Shades. Yeah. So he had a project for me to transfer shades from a building which was supposed to be destroyed, but the shades were new,
mm-hmm.
to our building, where the shades were very, very old. And this was a project to do it not for our department, but for the whole building.
Mm.
And at these days, the shades were so heavy.
Yeah, the shades?
In these days, the shades were so heavy. And now he had only one leg. He couldn't climb the ladder. So I climbed, and I was maybe 14. And I was holding this shade, really almost falling. And it's a fourth floor. I can fall out of the window. And I remember him staying down and say, don't break down. Keep strong, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Keep strong. I didn't have a choice. I just didn't have a choice. I had to do it, and I did it, yeah? Until I found how to do it smartly. But yeah, that's, in a way, he was my mentor.
Excellent. And just, one other question, and then we'll leave it off. Productivity-wise, do you recommend to a lot of the founders that you work with, do you say, this is something I recommend, that to keep focused, don't think on other things, just like you were saying before, just do one thing at a time. Don't be sidetracked. Is there, productivity-wise, is there advice that you give them?
I give them many, many advices. Many of them are full of shit.
Yeah.
You know, one thing which I can say about me, and there will be many, many people that would put you the stamp on that, I'm not so smart. And they are, most of the entrepreneurs, they are the smart guys, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the guy with maybe experience. Yeah, maybe. And by the way, maybe experience, because things are changing all the time, yeah? And today people are smarter. People at the age of 28 are much smarter than I was smart or experienced at the age of 38 or 40.
Yeah.
So I'm trying. I'm giving advices, and some of them are good, some of them are less good. But it's, the responsibility is on theirs. I'm just advisor.
I hear that.
I give my heart. I give my feet. I work for them. I care for them. But the success would be their success. And they are supposed to be the winner, the great guys that came with the idea and did the job, and I'm the guy who was maybe pushing a little bit the wagon, maybe changing directions of the wagon here and there, not more than that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure speaking with you. For all my listeners, feel free to subscribe, rate us on iTunes and Spotify and everything else. Thank you so much, Dov.
Bye-bye.
Love this episode of the Plugged In Podcast? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to C-Suite Radio, turning the volume up on business. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.